Hello and welcome to another edition of Center Circle Live. Marty Thompson, Armin Badagian, and Charlie O'Connor Clark with you again this week after a quick hiatus, and we've got a friend here today.
Yeah, Marty.
Does anyone want to explain this?
Marty, Marty's got a new little friend, new little buddy.
Yeah, so we've got a kitten, 4 weeks old, we think.
Aww.
From a barn cat, very friendly.
He just jumped onto your fern.
Yeah, he jumped through a fern, and here we are recording the podcast. I don't think it came through on that, though.
The fern is still intact, so.
Yeah, that's important. We did have to look up, like, if that fern was going to be, you know.
Problematic.
Yeah. That one's okay, but as you can see, some of the other ones have been put a little higher up. So,
Marty, I asked you what the name of this cat is, and you said you haven't named it yet.
Yeah, we've got a couple ideas, but I personally want to name it. This might anger some of the French-speaking people that listen to the show, but I wanted to name it something like a French-Canadian name, like a hyphenated name.
Why
like a Jean-Pierre.
No, that wouldn't anger them.
Well, I mean, I just thought it would be funny to give a cat like a long name.
Right.
Like a hyphen, like Jean-Pierre or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we don't really have a name yet. Thinking some other ideas, but yeah, don't really have one yet.
All right, well then why don't we leave it to our audience? If you have a
oh, please.
French-Canadian name that has some soccer significance, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tweet at CanPL Podcast or at Marty Thompson and let him know what he should name his cat.
Oh, please.
Put this
please.
Out to the community.
Yeah, don't make this like super embarrassing for me, guys.
Nomination is Balou. Balou Table.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
That would be a good one.
Jean-Yves.
Or we could name him Belangoyer.
I really liked Belangoyer.
Yeah. Or he could do like Brocillard.
Brocillard. Oh, so it has
Brocillard
to be two
is
names.
A full name.
Yeah, it has to be two names. It has to be two names and it has to be hyphenated.
I love those names. Oh, he's grabbing the cable right now. Okay, let's get into the show proper here. Let's start with the 905 Derby. Happened on Sunday. Forge winning 2-1 over York 9. I think York 9 is maybe the story here because big game, but came up flat in a couple different ways there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they are missing a huge piece of their attack in that match in Ryan Telfer, who's we're going to get to a little bit later, his call up to Trinidad and Tobago. But yeah, they put Michael Cox up there to start, which hasn't happened very often this season.
And something you had called for.
Yeah, yeah, it's something I was kind of interested in seeing. And
he's coming off injury.
He is coming off injury.
Jimmy Brennan pointed out,
mentioned that he had a groin injury. I don't know. I wouldn't have said that he looked bad. He just
looked very ordinary. There wasn't the kind of output that you would expect from your center forward, and certainly not the kind of solutions that Jimmy Brennan is looking for from his attack. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I mean, you know, it's Forge, you're away, they're already on a roll. It's not like you're expecting to come out of it with like a comprehensive win. But I think they stayed fairly competitive. They did eat a couple easy goals, but I don't know. Like, it was a weird one because it was a rivalry match, but not really. It didn't feel like one. Mm. There was no crunching tackles. There was no moments of controversy. Even the penalty, like Dominic Samuel gave away, was like, yeah, it's probably a penalty. I'm fine with it. And then before we knew it, the game was over.
And yeah, like, I mean, York 9 had a different look altogether. There were a couple of different personnel changes, like Gattaz kind of playing as a second striker and then Abzi moving up farther up the pitch. And obviously trying to combat something that Forge offers, and Forge has beat them on in terms of just like smothering, holding possession, being very difficult to break through. But
I'm not sure that they tried to hit on a counterattack as much as maybe they should have in a game like this, because Forge has kind of recently turned into much more of a team that can play the ball along the ground and hold on to a possession. So I'm wondering if maybe the tactics just weren't quite what York 9 needed on the day.
Yeah, and you got to look at Forge too, though, and you got to look at their team that they put out, Marcel Zajac getting his first goal, and what a time to get it. It's a game winner in a crucial, I would say, fall game where they can really establish what September is going to look like for them. They currently sit top of the table with a game in hand and a point over Cavalry in second. That's a really good position to be in if you're Bobby Smyrniotis, especially considering your last month. You've been down to Guatemala. You've been down to Honduras. You got that Honduras food poisoning bug. Shouldn't have taken the trip to Wendy's. I'm telling you. I'm just kidding. Sorry, Wendy's. Don't roast us on Twitter.
Oh, they totally would, too. They totally would.
But yeah, like if you look at their last month, and especially considering how many opportunities Edmonton and Pacific and Cavalry had to take this lead and really hold on to it.
Even York 9.
Even York 9.
Yeah.
there were so many opportunities that it's almost surreal that Forge is sitting at the very top of this table with, you know, not a huge lead, but you consider that maybe a, you know, with a game in hand, a 4-point lead. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Bobby would have wanted. Obviously with advancement in the CONCACAF League as well.
Yeah.
You have to think how good a position this really is for Forge, because not only are they in such a good spot right now to make this fall championship, but the team that's closest to them right now is Cavalry.
Mm-hmm.
And Forge is very likely to win the overall table if Cavalry does get this championship.
Even if Cavalry finishes first, like let's say by the end of the fall, these last 8-9 games, I mean, if Forge finishes second, the cumulative table will be on their side anyways.
Very likely.
And they have a big advantage over FC Edmonton,
yep.
who are playing Cavalry on Wednesday in the fourth El Clasico?
The fourth one, yes.
The fourth El Clasico.
Without a goal yet, though, that will be Jeff Paulus' main sticking point here.
Yeah.
Let's actually score one goal against Cavalry if possible.
That 1-0 at Spruce Meadows, that 3-0
at Clark Field.
And then the 0-0 that happened earlier in August, I believe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. From Edmonton's point of view, I mean, if you're looking at Forge, if you're looking at Cavalry winning that, I think Edmonton probably has to win in at least this game and probably some of the other ones coming up. I know they play Forge later, but to catch up.
Yeah, they're not quite out of it. I wouldn't even say that, because there's still a lot of points on the table. But we are getting to that part of the season where, you know, missed points here, missed points there, they start to add up. You're getting to the point of the season where a draw doesn't feel good enough anymore. Mm. And so if you're Jeff Paulus right now, this Cavalry game, you've got it circled on your calendar, and you're telling your boys, look, I don't care if you take days off against Pacific. I don't care if you take days off against HFX. But this is, like, we can try to beat those teams. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I need every single bit you have for this Cavalry game.
Just to maybe put it into context, Edmonton is, I think, at time of recording, 6 points back at Cavalry.
Yes, they are.
With 10 games played. So that's absolutely not out of the realm of possibility.
I mean, yeah, I think if anybody's watching it on a single table like EPL or La Liga, 6 points is about where you feel comfortable, where you can say things are still kind of in it.
And Edmonton coming off of the end of August where, you know, they dropped points against some teams that they probably should have beat. Valor, 3-1. Yeah. That looks crazy in retrospect. And then York 9 and the Wanderers drawing both those games. If you're able to nick out a win of one of those, you know, maybe I would be a little bit more up on their side.
I think they're probably a little maybe unlucky not to have got the win in that York 9 game, because that was the late equalizer where Ryan Telfer's goal somehow found the back of the net.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
It was a very strange one. So I'm sure you're kind of a little bit unlucky not to get the 3 points from that, but still, these things happen all the time. Like, you need to find a way to score another goal so that if a weird goal does go against you, you're still ahead.
So the other thing about Cavalry's season that I think is interesting is Cavalry has now played 10 matches, which is as long as the spring season was. Mm-hmm. And over the course of 10 matches in the spring, these guys got 24 points. Tommy Wilden Jr.'s team easily won that spring. They got like a 5-point lead over Forge in second. Mm-hmm. But now after 10 games, they're at 19. So clearly we've seen, through a combination of whether it's draws or losses, there's opportunities for Forge and I think for Edmonton to take advantage of this team here. And then the other thing you got to look at it is, like, Cavalry's approaching a time of the season where you're going to have to start weighing risk versus reward in terms of, you know, you've got a spot in the championship and maybe we're 3 or 4 games away from it. But you start looking at players who are maybe carrying knocks or maybe carrying, you know, injuries, and you say, okay, maybe we can sacrifice some short-term success for the longer picture, which is, how do I get my guys in the best shape and how do I get them in the best form going into this championship, which is two legs against one of these two, possibly Pacific. Most likely will be either Forge or Edmonton, which will not be easy.
Well, Marco Carducci will not be in the lineup for Cavalry on Wednesday. He's got a lot to do for the Canadian men's national team. I'm not sure if that makes it easier for Edmonton against Nico Giantsopoulos rather than Carducci.
I think Giantsopoulos is just as, you know, capable, but not having, you know, the VW premier performer leader and one of the kind of stars of that team in the lineup, it'll change things. It'll definitely make the communication a little different on the back line. And I think not having him there, you know, it presents Edmonton with a little bit more confidence. I would say just a touch more in terms of what they can get out of their attack. Carducci obviously will be busy, potentially playing even. I think we saw Maxime Crapaud go back to the Whitecaps. Mm-hmm. James Pantemis has replaced him.
In this two game series against Cuba.
So they're down in the they're down in the Cayman Islands right now. They're about to play Cuba, and I remember John Herdman said that he wanted to give Crapo a little bit of playing time, right? But without him in the lineup, presumably you can turn to some of your other players and go, okay, well, wait a second, why don't I give Carducci a go? So, I mean, we're on watch for this right now. I guess we're kind of on watch, but Carducci's having a really good couple weeks. I spoke to him in training on Thursday at Downsview Park, and he's been really enjoying himself. Milan Borjan I spoke to as well, and he's been full of praise. And
Carducci was pumped to work with him.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There was this great moment where Carducci was giving an interview to One Soccer, and while Asa was asking questions, Borjan came up behind the camera and started trying to make him laugh. And then when it didn't happen, he came up and kind of gave him a quick hug and then walked away. But there's camaraderie already. And I think Borjan is exactly the kind of guy who you want mentoring you, especially when you're a young goalkeeper. So it's been, he said it himself. He's been really happy with the way things are. If he can get a run out against a Cuban team that, truth be told, I don't think there's any pressure on Canada anymore. We saw what Cuba has to offer, and I don't think it'll change down south. But
yeah, Carducci on the bench for that 6-0 win at BMO Field.
Yep.
Favorite moment from that one, guys? There's many. Okay, Junior Horlett with a hat trick. Jonathan David's goal.
Okay, so there was a couple cool things that happened. Junior Horlett is a good story.
Yes.
Because if you were sitting in section 125 at BMO Field.
Or 126,
Or 126. Right? Yeah. I think it kind of scattered over. If you were sitting in that section, anytime Horlett touched the ball, there was a louder cheer. There was clapping. It was a very surreal experience because he brought 200 people from Brampton.
Yeah. Bought all the tickets himself.
Yeah. Herdman confirmed it. We asked them, and we're just like, did he buy the tickets? And yeah. So.
And it should also be noted, wearing the captain's armband that night as well. Yeah. And had a great game. Herdman said that after, where it was interesting what he said in the press conference, saying that Horlett can sometimes come in and out of games and maybe not do the full 90-minute for performance. And what we saw there was he was pressing, he was moving the ball well, and it was an all-rounder.
His fingerprints were all over that game.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know how much of it has to do with the fact that maybe his entire high school graduating class had come along to watch him.
An extended family.
Extended family.
We got the fifth cousins in. It was great.
Yeah. You got a show for the fifth cousins.
I think that Jonathan David goal, though, I think we got to talk about that.
Okay, so that happened literally right in front of me. And I remember seeing the first touch where he kind of rainbow touched it. And
reaching back.
I remember seeing it and thinking to myself, no, that wasn't real. I must have imagined it. I thought it was for a second. I was like, no. There was some confusion or something. I didn't just see his leg just do that.
See, for me, it happened so fast. I didn't remember it. I was like, wait, what happened?
It was slow motion for me. Cause then I saw him touch the ball and I remember going, oh, on three separate instances where I was oh. And then he touched the ball past the defender, and I was like, oh.
He beat the defender twice, passed him, and then cut back on him after.
It took me four or five watches of the replay to just realize the extent of how much had happened in the lead up to that goal.
It took me 150,000 rewatches. No, but it was – I feel like this goal is low-key one of the best goals I've seen,
I think for Canada.
Anybody score. Well, certainly for Canada, but in terms of individual brilliance, that was – guys, I'm going to say it.
Do it.
That was Messi.
Oh, my God. Oh, there it is.
That
he
was
went
Messi
in on it. He went in on
for.
It. Well, I mean, I think
was beautiful.
We haven't mentioned the finish either, where he was just perfectly composed, went between the keeper's legs after pulling back. It just worked so fast. But in that last sequence, it was perfect.
He looks up for a second. He's like, that's my spot. And he
it. Yeah. Oh, it was, yeah.
I still don't know why my article was rejected.
The saying David was like Messi.
Headline, Jonathan David makes Messi look like Neymar.
John Molinaro was looking at that being like,
No, he's not into it. Go down to third, pal.
So Canada playing Cuba.
Cristiano Ronaldo staying first, of course.
in the second game of the Nations League, the Cayman Islands. A neutral venue game for both teams, I guess. Cuba not playing at home. Carducci might play, but other than that, something that Herdman mentioned was a lot of squad rotation, especially with the quick turnaround. Who else in that squad do you think should maybe deserve a shot in there?
That's a good question. I think if there is going to be heavy squad rotation, and we basically know what that lineup is, and I'd be more interested in seeing a returning player. I want to see more of Richie Leria. I thought he did really well.
I think he's probably going to play.
And I thought Kamal Miller was decent. I'd like to
see more of those two fullbacks had one cap between them.
Yeah. And I think Liam Miller played well in the second half. I'd like to see more of him, as a preferably as a, like a starter, give him a good hour to kind of assert himself. But like,
I'm curious if Steven Vittoria is going to get
the name that was on the tip of my tongue.
Came in the second half in that one.
And then I liked Mark Anthony Kay in midfield. I'd like to see a little bit more of that. He's called him one of his leaders in camp. John Herdman has called him one of the leaders. And I think, you know, there's definitely something to be said. It was funny because in training, anytime Mark Anthony Kay was like taking a shot or something there, and if he missed it, for example, or if Carducci made a save on him, the rest of the team would just be like, oh, yeah, MLS All-Star.
Yeah, it really seems like Kay has become one of the like most kind of outspoken and probably well-liked guys in that squad.
Well, can you fault him, though? Like, look at his story.
I talked to him when he first got in there, and he was a great interview. And like he talked quite frankly about the idea of playing left back this whole season, and something that Herdman said, look, you need to do this for the team. You'll get a chance in the midfield. Mm-hmm. And Saturday was his first chance in the midfield, and you know, Herdman had nothing but praise after.
Mark Anthony Kay is exactly the kind of player who would have benefited from having a Canadian Premier League 5 years ago.
Definitely.
He's now in his mid-20s, and he's bouncing around the Toronto Academy. He was bouncing around York University. Like, if you gave this guy a showcase, a platform at 20 years old, he would have been, like, he would have grasped it and gotten full advantage of it.
His first season with LAFC last year, and he was, like, 23?
Yeah, I remember when he signed for LAFC, there was questions. They were like, why? But clearly, Bob Bradley saw something in him, and you know what?
Arguably the best rookie in MLS.
You've got to wonder, like, if there was any Michael Bradley scouting reports that were sent in as well, but at the same time, like, good for them for giving him a chance, and good for him for taking advantage of it. He came off of an awful injury that ruled him out for a long time. Didn't faze him. He's right back in his beat, and you know what? Now he's in midfield, to the point where you're wondering, like, okay, Scott Arfield isn't in this roster, neither is Atiba Hutchinson. And Atiba Hutchinson's significantly on the older end. Now, let's say you figure Arfield back in when the games start to, you know, test you a little more. But at the same time, like, Mark Anthony Kay is like the perfect central midfielder for you.
And Herdman, with this camp, let's be honest, he's getting a look at guys for those USA games.
Yep, definitely.
Especially in the midfield, and Mark Anthony Kay being one of them. But, I mean, the first one, I think, is at BMO Field in October.
That's the Osorio versus Bradley game.
All TFC all the time. Yeah. I mean, those are really the ones, right? Because it's something that Herdman said. Also, these Nation League games are important because if they're able to advance out of this Group A, League A, then they have a chance to climb that FIFA ladder and get into this pre-qualifying hex, whatever you want to call it. And you got to beat the USA. You got to beat the USA.
I don't think there's ever been a better opportunity for Canada to actually beat the U.S. two times. Mm-hmm. Like, I genuinely think that the national team that Canada has right now has just as talented a group of players as whatever transitional U.S. national team Greg Berhalter is kind of trotting out. And there's like, it's right there in front of you. Like, it will never be harder because, like, this is a U.S. team that's, like, just as young, just as talented, but at the same time, you've never had a team that's as, you know, well put together as this one is.
On the attacking side.
That being said, though, like, I don't know, like, I feel like Daniil Henry is comfortable at this level. You know, like, he's playing against MLS attackers, like, predominantly MLS midfielders.
Derek Cornelius as well.
And those two have good chemistry, so you stick a couple of, you know, decent fullbacks on either end of them. You know, maybe Abzi, I don't, like, if you, Zalangwa, and then you're golden.
With Nations League in full swing and some World Cup qualifiers, we had some other CPL players get international debuts on the weekend.
Yeah, it looks like Ryan Telfer, York 9 midfielder, he's now officially a member of the Trinidad and Tobago national team. He's been, you know, he earned the call-up, but he's now been cap-tied, and I think that he's like played something like 77 minutes or something.
Yeah, against Martinique, I believe.
And he looked good. 1-1
draw.
He looked pretty decent. We watched some highlights, and I think, you know, good for him. He was conflicted about his national team. He said he wanted to get his career started. And Herdman also identified him as one of the players that stood out from the CPL. It was Telfer, Carducci, and Tristan Borges, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he was wanted on both sides, and I think maybe Trinidad leaned into that and said, okay, well, if Canada's looking, then we want him too. I don't know. This is a weird one for me because I think the Cuba game would have been a good opportunity to cap tie Ryan Telfer for Canada, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, Ryan Telfer has expressed interest in Trinidad, and I think this is probably where his heart was pointing towards as well. So between him and Quillen Roberts over at Forge, who was on the bench for Guyana when they beat Aruba 1-0, I mean, the CPL is providing opportunities to these Canadian kids on an international level that, you know, their nationalities are, it's like their family nationalities. You know, these are the countries that they identify with alongside Canada. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
It's a very Canadian thing.
It's a very, very Canadian thing. And same with our lineup. Our lineup has players who were born here. Mm-hmm. Our lineup has players who have made Canada home. Guys who have been playing abroad forever, but still consider Canada to be theirs. I mean, the world is getting smaller every year. And I think it's a beautiful kind of sight to see that this kind of international, you know, connection can still make you feel Canadian at home.
Okay, we got to talk about Youssef as well. HFX yes. Wanderers.
Abdelaziz Youssef. Not a very well-known commodity at HFX. You know, he was signed early in the season, but he's 19. Mm-hmm. He hasn't made any appearances, but called up to the Somalian national team.
Such a great story,
incredible.
Man.
Incredible.
202nd ranked overall out of 211 nations by FIFA.
So they're the lowest ranked team in Africa.
Lowest ranked team in Africa.
And they beat Zimbabwe.
And they beat Zimbabwe in World Cup qualifying 1-0.
In like 87th minute goal. Yeah. Like you unreal saw Youssef too. Scenes. Like, oh, the celebration unreal was scenes. Unbelievable.
He played the full 90 in that match, in a historic match for his country.
Their first ever win in World Cup qualifying.
Yep.
Yeah. Wasn't it at a neutral venue too?
It was in a neutral venue, I believe.
Yeah.
But it was just like the scenes.
It's one of the biggest stories in international soccer
this week.
And there's an HFX Wanderers player right in the center of it.
It was a really cool scene and also a really good moment for a young player who can now bring that kind of confidence back to the HFX Wanderers and say, like, I just, you know, kicked off my international career. We just made history. I'm full of confidence. Like, I'm ready to play, coach. And Stephen Hart can be like, yeah, get in there. 87th minute winner.
Okay, back to school season. Let's do some report cards.
Report cards?
Fall campaign report cards.
I saw you did a report card on the national team too.
I did, yeah, yeah. I did, yeah. After the game against Cuba.
You gave a perfect 10 for Junior Hoylett.
10 for 10. Yeah.
I love it. Okay, so yeah,
we're not gonna do numbers here. I want letter grades.
Letter grades. Okay, let's so we are midway through the fall, so I think this is a good like what's that thing called in school?
Progress report.
Yeah, we'll call them a progress report.
Okay, let's start at the bottom here with HFX Wanderers. We were talking about Youssef there.
HFX has been kind of a mixed bag for me. I would say they're like a solid, like a C plus maybe.
2-6-2 record.
Yeah, they haven't been, you know, great, but that being said, when they're on form, they're spectacular to watch. So that's kind of the range that I would kind of rank them right now. I think just the only thing that Halifax needs is a little bit more time together. They've had these extended breaks where they've had training sessions, but they also need more games together. Mm-hmm. And I think once they start to bring all these pieces together, there's an opportunity for them to really start to express themselves, especially at home where we know that they're so much better. I think if – what's the thing on the report card, like the little comment section where like the teachers are like
– Has Armin ever had a report card before?
To be honest, my report cards were like a blur. It's just like, yeah, here it is. Don't talk to me about it.
Well, I think a C is probably fair for the Wanderers. Also, because Peter Schall, right?
That comment section on the report card would say something like, shows tremendous potential or something, and I don't know. That's just a teacher being nice.
Yeah, I would agree. I might even put a plus on that C just because there have been a couple of results that I've been actually really impressed by. Holding Cavalry to a clean sheet.
Yep.
0-0. And even Labor Day when they held FC Edmonton off the board and held them to one shot.
Yeah, and probably should have scored in that game.
Yeah, so
this is a C+, but like an underachieving C+. Like, you know, they can do better.
They have struggled with some injuries. There have been a few players that have been kept out, but yeah.
Okay, so coming up here second, York 9. 3-6-1 record.
Six losses. So that's the kind of the struggle for me. Like, I think HFX on their day plays, like, you know.
Let's not forget the 6-2 win.
Just as good, but... So that was my point. I think HFX and York 9 have the same offensive potential, but York 9 just has the ability to kind of go a little harder. I don't know. I would say they've been like a B minus, C plus, B minus.
Yeah. I think I'd still give them a C, though, because they have been overall disappointing.
Yes.
Because especially if we rewind to episodes we recorded at the start of the fall season, like one of us would have picked them to at least be close.
Yeah, they were definitely contenders, and I think they've fallen off a little bit now. But that being said, though, I still think that, like, when pitted against a really tough team, York 9 can show. You know, like, they played well against Montreal. They played well in the Canadian Championship bouts. Like, they didn't look like a C team. That's why I kind of lean a little higher on that one.
Yeah. See, I, for the same reasons, though, I kind of lean a little lower because I feel like I kind of expect more out of them.
That's fair.
Like, so I might even put them on the C minus to D plus level of this because I
disappointing,
think, I think
you know?
That they can clearly can, like we've seen, be a lot better. This might just be recency bias talking because they didn't have a very good August.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I know that they can do a lot better than this, especially when they were playing Forge on Sunday. The attack just wasn't there.
It's like the opposite of all my report cards, and the comment would be, needs to be more disruptive in class.
Okay, let's keep this on track.
Lovely.
Valor. Let's go to them. Right. The last result, of course, being that 8-0 loss.
Recency bias will probably dictate a pretty bad score on this, but I think Valor has been, you know, they're tied for points with Pacific, so it's not like they're completely out of it. Extra game played, yeah. I don't know. Valor.
See, for me, they're actually, like, they're maybe a C plus.
They're good. They're good on the front foot in the sense that, like, they have a lot of really high quality pieces. So it's just a matter of how do you put all that together.
The way that they've been attacking in the fall season has been exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the way Bustos and Petrasso play off each other. I thought Galan was a great addition to midfield. Belen Goyer, you guys know how I feel about him. I think he's one of the best midfielders in the league. Paolucci's been a revelation up top for them, much better than what they had before. Then you got guys like Tyler Attardo who can game change. Like, they have all of the pieces. I just think that there's been, like, some weird disciplinary stuff with, like, Jordan Morel, for example. I think the back line has been kind of questionable. Adam Mitter, I wasn't too impressed with his play during the 8-0 loss. So, I don't know. I might go C- just because there have been some consistency issues. There's definitely been some defensive issues.
But you look at some of those wins, right? Like, they beat the Wanderers 2-0. Like, that was only, what, like a week ago, or feels like a week ago?
You have these days where Valor is just, like, this really potent attacking outfit, capable of outscoring their opponents. And then there's just these days where they just collapse. And it's just, it's hard to judge based on that. I don't know. What's a good middle ground grade?
C+.
C+? Fine, let's go
C+. That's, like, right in the middle.
Okay, so moving on, Pacific FC. 3-4-3 record. Not the formation, the record.
Can we grade just Taron Campbell?
Taron Campbell is like an A++.
Taron Campbell, to me, makes them like a B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that might be recency basis, but...
So this is weird for me because, like, I think that Pacific is closer to like a B+, A-. Like, I think that the four losses they've suffered in the fall are predominantly due to, you know, combinations like playing really good teams or... like injuries, there's been like external factors that have reduced their ability to perform. It's not necessarily this is my best outfit and we just come up short. It's these are the obstacles that I'm currently facing. I don't have what I need to succeed, but I'll make the best out of it.
Draws against Cavalry and Forge.
Yeah, they
in the last
just drew Forge,
two results.
Taron Campbell becoming the first player to, the fact that Taron Campbell started the season off as like, Marcus Haber is unavailable. Can this kid even play? To this guy just scored 10 goals. And he's like the first ever player to score double digits in this league. Like, that's remarkable. And then that's not even talking about the fact that in recent weeks, Victor Blasco and Ben Fisk have both looked they haven't been to their full potential.
Right.
Marcus Haber's kind of been in and out of the lineup as he returns from his injury. And then you've got this new kid, David Norman Jr., perfectly usable in midfield. Like, I thought he looked solid.
It's a fantastic addition, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Plus, like, they're all kids.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's the other thing. So for me, Pacific is, on paper, based on the standings, if you look at
but
it.
But you don't
like
get grades for potential, though.
Well, I don't know.
Charlie?
I'm kind of in agreement with Armin. I think that Pacific definitely... I'd probably go B+. I don't think I'd be brave enough to put them in the A's.
I think for what they have, they've performed admirably. So if you take what they have and output it based on that, that's A- in my book.
Okay. I don't think they've been consistent, like, out of a game that they've played yet.
That's fair, but I don't know.
FC Edmonton, 3-2-5 record, 5 draws.
That's a B to me.
I think that they're, for me, they're a little bit below Pacific in that regard. Yeah. Probably about a B minus.
B is good because it's like a nice average, which is right around where they are. But I think the way we've talked about Edmonton is accurate based on the grade is, okay, you've got the base, you have a solid foundation. Impress me. Like do the things that you need to title race, basically. And then if you can, that score easily rises, right?
Yeah.
Like you've done enough in the fall to be in that conversation.
Yeah.
So now do something with it.
You're like on a roll, but like your average is 80. So you're technically on a roll, but like we know that if you do your homework and, you know, apply yourself, that could easily be like honors plus what's that other thing?
I just had the
valedictorian like award or whatever.
I just had the biggest flashback to high school. I'm like, you're great, but like you're so close. And I'm like, it's fine.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I got like a 79.5 in high school. Like I missed honor roll by 0.5. So.
Okay. Cavalry. Second place in the fall standings. 5-1-4 record. Again, just the one loss. Sitting on 19 points.
You got to give them like an A, right?
I think it's solid A.
I think so.
But I would say A minus because they haven't been as good as they were in the spring.
So spring would be A plus to you?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. It was plus, almost plus. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, this would be more of an A minus because again, they have dropped. How many points did they have again, Armin? What was
19.
That? 19.
Yeah.
So it's not, it was against 24?
It was 24 in the spring after 10 games.
Yeah. If you want to get mathematic with it, but.
And which I don't. They've looked more human in general, though.
Yeah, definitely.
They've also had bigger obstacles, bigger challenges. They had the Canadian Championship. So there are moments where you're like, whoa, that was an A-plus performance. I think the best Cavalry game I've ever seen is the one they played against the Whitecaps at BC Place. Mm-hmm. But you isolate that, and then the rest of the season has been kind of not at their very best, but also because they don't need to be at their very best. It's like if you did an exam and you got like 115% on it because you drew a pretty awesome picture on the back. Like I used to.
just tying everything back to school. I love it.
It's like when I walked into my grade 12 stats exam needing a 6% to pass the class.
Nice.
And you got a 5?
No, I got it.
What were the odds that you would get a 6%?
I wasn't very good at stats, so I don't know.
94%. I guess. Jeez. I don't know. In grade 12, I was like, all right, I need some good university level courses. Like, I'm going to take advanced functions, even though I didn't take grade 11 math. And then I think 5 minutes into the lecture, I was like, this isn't it. So I put my hand up and I'm like, sir, I'm going to go switch classes. And everyone in class laughed. But I was like, no, in earnest. I'm like, I'm going to go to the office right now and switch classes. So I just got up and left. And then I took drama.
The teacher feel bad?
He was laughing. He's like, yeah, go. I'm like, dude, I don't know what any of these numbers mean. Why are there letters in an equation? How did that happen?
Don't tell him. Okay. Number one, Forge. Top of the fall standings. What do we got for them? 6-1-2 record.
Can you do A like plus? A and then half a plus?
Let's give
like between A and A plus.
Let's give them a classic Canadian like number percentage. So like probably somewhere between 90 and 100.
They're like a 94.
94?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't want to put them on the same level as say a Spring Cavalry would be.
They're not as good as Cavalry, but they are pretty good.
Okay. Yeah.
So if that Spring Cavalry is like a 98, this Forge team is probably about 94.
Oh, they weren't a 98.
They lost one game.
Yeah, they lost. How is that?
No, that's it. They lost
one
game.
That's the only blemish.
That's the only blemish.
So you're saying one loss out of a 10-game season
is 2%? They won like 8 in a row.
One loss after they'd already wrapped up a championship.
Yeah.
Okay, so if they won every game, then that would be
100%. That's 100. Yes.
So the fact that they lost a game and also, I don't know, drew. Oh, yeah, they lost two games. They lost two games.
In spring?
Yeah, in the
they did lose that
oh, they did.
Game
yeah,
on,
they did.
On
so so 1% each of those losses. Not buying that. I think they were like a 90 in the spring. Cavalry.
Okay.
Your standards are
that's high.
Look, I mean,
I don't want to take your class, Marty.
Two losses. it wasn't perfect.
This is not you the bird course I was expecting it to be.
Don't tell them about the letter numbers. Okay, seems like a good spot to end it. Any other thoughts, Armin, on your high school experience?
Yeah, sure. Because I went to high school with Jonathan Grant, who is currently killing it over at Forge, I think I can share a Jonathan Grant story.
Sure.
I probably can. So when I actually went to elementary school with Jonathan Grant. Back then we knew him as Nick, which is his middle name, I believe.
That's kind of interesting.
I used to play. Yeah. He used to play striker. I used to be a defender. And one day, I just decided to pop off. I was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna have a good game today." So it was like a recess, like scrimmage, and he kept trying to meg me, and then I kept denying him, and I think I put like a good standing tackle in, like a really good standing tackle, and I think he fell over. And after the game was over, like I was exhausted. Like I don't think I've ever put in that much effort into like a friendly skirmish in my life. And he came over and he like kind of shook my hand, like did like one of those little clap things.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was just like, "Yo, man, if you keep doing that, you'll be like a pretty good defender." And I'm like, "Thanks, man. If you keep like playing like that, you'll be a pretty good striker one day." Nope. Immediately put into fullback. So that's a Jonathan Grant story for you. He was a striker. I don't know where this fullback version of him came from.
Look,
but
man,
it's working.
That finish against Cavalry.
Yeah, put him in front of goal. That's why every time he's like doing something in front of goal, I'm like, "That's the guy I know."
That's Nick.
Yo, yeah, that's Nick.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you guys. Hey, so we know this episode's over, but if you're still listening, it means you're probably a dedicated fan.
Hi.
Dedicated listener. We had another dedicated listener reach out to us, didn't they, Marty?
Yes.
And they let us know. They let us know that last week's episode was a little late, so that's why this week's episode is a double. So I guess it's a shout out to Ken from U-Sector, Ken Lickers.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Sorry, I'm out of words.